Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenda Geek in sunny for a change, Lexington, Kentucky.
And I am Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning for Thursday, February 3rd, 2011, episode 69, sponsored by Easy Signs Online. Good morning, Horse World.
Back to the business at hand. He surveyed his surroundings carefully and found that there was no shadow around. So an early spring it will be!
Here comes the sun, and I say it's all right. Sunshine on my shoulder makes me happy.
Can you tell I'm believing that groundhog, Jamie? I'm just trusting that groundhog.
It's like you would think that today is the first day of spring. The music is like leading you to believe that it's sunny and 75 where you are. But what is the temperature in Lexington right now?
18.
But it's sunny.
But it's sunny.
Well, you'll just take any bright spot you can, I guess, huh?
Yeah, and why should, if you think about it, groundhogs are the enemy of horse people. So why I'm putting so much trust in a groundhog right now is beyond me. Because I need to. We all need it.
Those little suckers they're evil.
We all need that trust and hope, though, that spring's going to come soon this year. I was listening to a talk show out of Boston, and thank God I don't live there anymore. But, they have so much snow, they just don't know what to do with it. And they're talking about, they want to dump it in the bay there, but the harbor. But there's all kinds of protests about dumping it in the harbor because of salt and all that stuff. Like, it's salt water. But there's all these protests about what they're going to do with it. They had another 14 inches yesterday.
Oh, my God. Wow.
They're kind of... Anyway, we need to go to Jennifer right away today because she's busy, got a busy show lined up for us today. Tell us all about it.
Busy, busy, busy. On today's show, we'll be having a lively chat with Dr. Jeff Tucker about what not to do when the dentist comes. This should be really interesting. I think he's got some personal stories there. Then, with all the hubbub about Zenyatta and Bernardini going on, we thought that a primer on bloodlines and breeding farms might be in order, brought to you by none other than Eclipse Award-winning Adena Springs Farm. I'm sure going to be educational and a little bit quirky. And, of course, we'll have clever comments from our famous Facebookers, insightful inquiries from courageous callers, and snappy sarcasm from Jamie and Glenn.
Snappy sarcasm. Well, Jamie, we both found a story last night about the same time that was kind of important, so go ahead and tell us about it.
Oh, my gosh. Can you believe it? It went out on Twitter. It went out on Facebook. It went out on, every avenue of the Internet possible, and it's Debbie McDonald, of course, who rode Brentana, and she is she's an Olympic medalist, she's a WEG medalist, she's a World Cup champion. She came off a horse, on Tuesday, and it was a really, really, really bad fall. Apparently, she was sitting on this horse, belonged to a client. It started to go into bronco bucking mode, she says, throwing its head, stretching it down between its legs. And she said she realized at some point I was going to come off. Now, since we're quoting her after the accident, obviously she's okay. You know, as well as you can after getting bucked off by a giant warm blood. But she says that she called Courtney King Dye and said, "You saved my life." Ever since Courtney's accident, she's been wearing a helmet nonstop every time she gets onto a horse. So she said she went head first into the footing. And apparently when they took the helmet off, it showed that the footing went up actually into the base of the helmet. That's how hard she fell. And she ended up with a black eye, some scratches on her face, and a concussion. But she's now up and walking around. She says that this has totally convinced her from now on she will not teach anyone unless they're wearing a helmet. So tragic, you know, sad story, but could have been tragic. But thank God that dressage people are wearing their helmets now.
You know, and one of the amazing things that Jennifer and I found about this story is she said she was launched over 30 feet.
Oh, my gosh.
That horse was bucking. Now, Debbie is a little spit of a thing, too. She's not, you know, she's very petite. So I can imagine, you know, it's just like on our favorite show, Wipeout, you know, when they all get launched 30 feet. Only there, it's into water, not on hard ground.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're falling into, you know, whipped cream or something.
Now,
not falling.
Yeah. Now, do the laws of physics dictate, because she's really small and feather light, that given the same buck, she would not fly as far as somebody bigger, like tossing a feather versus tossing a brick?
I don't know. On Wipeout, when they have them sit at the end of that big balloon and drop that big thing at the end and they go flying 30 feet into the air, it seems to me that the light ones go flying further. So that would be interesting. You know, that's probably – I could probably argue both sides of this one.
We should ask a rodeo rider, somebody who does the bull riding or something, because they are experts, after all, on being launched.
That's true. That's
right.
True.
However, you know, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. So
yeah, see?
She might have launched farther, but, you know, to be launched 30 feet straight into the ground, she says, and she only escaped with, and I mean, this is bad still, but it could have been so much worse without a helmet on. She escaped with a concussion, facial lacerations, and severe whiplash, and she is begging everybody now to wear their helmets. She said that Courtney King Dye saved her life.
There you go.
And of course, this is just short, 1 month short of the law coming into effect for dressage. They have to wear helmets at USEF sanctioned events here in the United States. So that was timely, and we're glad. We send our best out. Of course, she is a regular co-host on the Dressage Radio Show here on the Horse Radio Network, and I'm sure Chris will be having her on very shortly to talk about it, so stay tuned over there to dressageradio.com. I have a bunch of little news stories here on the entertainment side of things for you, Jamie. One
All
is,
right.
remember a couple of weeks ago we talked about Buck Brannaman's movie called Buck. It's a documentary about Buck Brannaman and his horse gentling techniques, and it was inspired by Nicholas Evans' popular novel, The Horse Whisperer. And the Robert Redford film.
Right, but he based that, Nicholas Evans based that on Buck. So
right.
The whole idea was based upon him anyway.
Well, it actually won an award at the Sundance Film Festival. It won the U.S.
Wow.
Documentary Competition Audience Award. And it has been picked up now by Sundance Selects, which is a rights company, a movie company that distributes movies. And it has acquired the North American distribution rights to Buck, and it says here it's expected to be widely available in theaters soon. So it looks like they might – I thought, you know, it's going to go out to a few of the theaters, you know, the independent movie theaters in the cities, but it sounds like they may be bringing this out on a wider opening. So let's hope so, and we'll get to watch it then at a theater near us.
Yeah, you know, and hopefully it won't be like those – only opening in New York and L.A.
I know.
You have to travel to see the movie. But, yeah, I think it's awesome. And for those of people who don't know Buck, I don't know him either, but I've only heard about him because he's the guy that taught everybody else that you've heard of. And he's just not the kind of guy that's, you know, created his own special halter and whip to market to everybody, to get them to buy it, to get them to train their horse. This is like the horseman's horseman. And, you know, surprisingly, I thought he would be some really, really old guy. But I watched the preview, the trailer of this movie, and he's not old at all. He's young. I mean, he's probably in his 50s or something. So, you know, I expected it to be some 85-year-old man, the way everybody talks about him, as he's their icon and their idol. But he's not. He's a young guy. So he just really made a pretty big impact on the people he's trained. And those people have gone on to become very famous and marketing geniuses.
Yes, and Jennifer, we should try and get somebody from the movie on, either Buck himself or one of the people that put the movie together. Cindy Meal, it was her documentary, and you know, it really does go into his life and you know, it talks about him. They call him the Zen master of the horse world. So, well, let's see if we can get somebody on from there and talk about that. Somebody else I'd like to get on is somebody from, remember we talked about the War Horse, Broadway theater production coming to New York City. Well, they're selling the tickets now, and it starts on March the 15th. It's going to play on Broadway. And I went in, and I found this very interesting. When you go, and we had obviously just went away over the weekend, and there's nothing that drives me more crazy. Then you go to a hotel and you get the rate of $99 a night. But then by the time you check out and they add all the fees on, it adds another 20-30% to the price every night. Well, it's the same way when you buy theater tickets in New York City. I went on to take a look at what the War Horse's ticket prices were. They're anywhere from $75 to $115. By the way, how do you say L-O-G-E when it comes to theater? That's the rear L-O-G-E and the L-O-G-E.
Isn't that the loge?
Is it loge?
It's the loge.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a loge section, which means I think it's just a part of a theater.
Yeah, well, the rear loge must be the poor people's seats, because that's the cheapest at $75. But the fees are $22.50 on a $75 ticket.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. And then the loge, which is in the middle part, that's the middle class, that's $115, but the fees are $34.50. So it brings it up to $100. Yes, for a $150 ticket for the orchestra, if you want to be really up close, which would probably be the place to be, is the same price, by the way, as the loge at $149.50. But that would be the place to be, wouldn't it? Because this, you know, this has the horse in War Horse is a great big puppet. That's you know, operated by three or four guys. So it would probably be interesting, or maybe it'd be more interesting to see it further back. I'm not sure. Samantha actually and Chris have actually seen it over in England, so I'm not sure which would be the better place to see it from. But there are group rates, too. If we can get a group of 20 and all go together, we can get a little bit cheaper rate.
I have to tell you, I saw the what's the Lion King? And they do it much like they do the horse, where it's people kind of in the really amazingly constructed costumes. And my dad was so excited because he's like, we got front row, we got front row. Well, there's a reason that you get front row, because nobody else wants it, because it's way better to sit in the back. Here I am looking up some dude's leotard, you know, while he's underneath the monkey. I'm like, this front row sucks for this kind of thing, because all you look at is up underneath the thing. So you ideally, sorry, Dad, if you're listening, I mean, it was an amazing time and I loved it. But you want to be further back. So I would suggest buying the further back tickets. But it's funny, my girlfriend and I were looking yesterday at, I really, 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 really want to go see Garth Brooks in Las Vegas. I think that's the coolest thing ever, but it was kind of the same deal, Glenn. The tickets were like $125, $250, and then you have to pay a certain percentage for the people to handle your ticket and then do whatever, and you just print it out online. So I don't know what the fees are for, but it seems a little ridiculous, especially for the War Horse one.
Ticketmaster drove me crazy that way, because every time you buy a ticket, you have to pay a fee to print it out on your computer. Shouldn't they be paying me to print it out on my computer?
Seriously, it's my paper and my ink.
Right,
you
exactly.
You should pay me.
I know, exactly. So anyway, that was the second note. Third note, I have something for free that you don't have to pay $150 for. And that is, if you have an Android phone, you can get a new app, and I haven't downloaded it yet, but I'm going to do that today. I'll let you know tomorrow whether it's any good. They have an Android app called Virtual Horse Racing 3D, and it says here, Compulsive Gamblers Unite, catch some racing fever right over your phone. This app delivers a complete racetrack experience. Read the stats on the racing form before placing your virtual dollar bets on the horses. Like the real thing, you lay down your cash for win, place, or show, or a combo of the three. And the fun starts when the race begins. Just like on TV, the view follows the virtual horses and their jockeys as they run around the track. Thrills and chills abound as the horses vie for first place. The camera goes into slow motion just as the pack crosses the finish line. So, I don't think you really win. Maybe it spits out real money if you win. I doubt it, though. but yeah, I'm going to give it a try, see if it's any fun at all. We'll check it out for you. It's called Virtual Horse Racing 3D. And I did look it up in the App Store on the Android, and it was there, so you can just download it. I have it downloading now, actually. So I'll play it.
I'm going to download the iPhone version.
Do they have one?
They do, but it doesn't say 3D, though.
Ah, see, we get the 3D, and you just get the crappy old 2D. By the way, that's another thing. As far as paying extra for 3D movies, I'm kind of over the 3D thing now. You know, the last time we went, we had a choice of the 3D version or the 2D version. We took the 2D. You know, the 3D things, after you've seen about 10 of them in 3D, it's just like, you know, unless it's shooting stuff at my face where everybody reaches out to try and grab it, like Disney, I'm not feeling the whole 3D thing. Maybe it's just me.
It is the cool thing about the Disney ones is that, you know, if you go to Epcot Center or you go to Disney World and you go see a 3D movie there, they actually will, like, spit water on you and you'll sit in these chairs where the air will come out of the back, like it feels like somebody's breathing on the back of your neck. That is a cool, I think they even call those,
yes,
4D movies. amazing.
I absolutely agree. I love those. And that makes it a little bit more of an interactive experience. But you know what? Like when we saw, what was the movie with the big blue guys?
Avatar?
Yeah, we saw, I can't even remember. When we saw Avatar, that was pretty cool in 3D. I have to admit, that was one worth seeing in 3D.
Oh, yeah, that one was amazing. And Chad went and saw it while I was out of town, and he's like, you have to go see this movie. So he actually saw it again. And it's enough for just to get us out to the theater. So to go twice to a movie, he must have really liked it. And it was beautiful. I wasn't too sure I was in love with the movie, but it was amazing anyway. Boomer, be quiet.
Yeah, it did get kind of long. Avatar was one of those movies that got kind of long. And I have a special, speaking of movies, I have a special game that we're going to play sometime next week that I have lined up for you and Jennifer, and maybe we'll get a listener on, see if we can get a listener on to play with us. But I actually found a website that has all the trailers of the top horse movies that have ever come out, and it has a bunch of them. So I think what I'm going to do is put some sound files together for you guys and pick out some sound out of the trailers, and we're going to play Guess That Horse Movie. And we'll get a listener on to play with us. Wouldn't that be fun?
That's going to be my favorite game of all time. Hello. Challenge me on horse movie trailers? God, I mean, come on. That's perfect. You play a clip of a song where a guy's galloping, I can name the movie. So.
All right. That's good. It's good to know because, you know, it might be that old game show, that game show where you had to guess the song and how many notes. You might be doing that with
name,
movie trailer.
I can name that movie in four horse beats, Glenn.
All right, let's get to our first guest. We have on here one of my favorite guys to talk to and has been helping us out here on the Horse Radio Network for probably 2 years, and that's Dr. Tucker, our favorite dentist and traveling entrepreneur. Dr. Tucker, welcome to Horses in the Morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing? How do I sound?
You sound great, actually. Are you in the truck driving again, or are you actually pulled over, or what?
I pulled over for you guys. I really did. I didn't want to get in a wreck on your account.
Well, you know what? We feel special now because I think this is the first time I've ever talked to you that you actually pulled over. So.
Well, actually, it's because I wasn't wearing my helmet, so I figured I should pull over.
Where are you at? What part of the country, Dr. Tucker?
I'm right outside of Tampa this morning.
Outside of where?
Tampa. Tampa, like South Florida.
Oh, yeah. You're in Florida where it's warm.
Oh, no, we had a blizzard this morning. We had snow. We got a couple inches here. Yeah.
No, you did not. You are yeah. Okay.
We have
I almost
too many people out here. We don't need any more.
I noticed something. Dr. Tucker travels all up and down the East Coast doing teeth for horses all over the East Coast, all the way up to Canada. But I did notice something. He happens to stay around home in Florida for the month of February and March. You know, in March he starts coming out of hiding, and he may cross the Georgia line.
Hey, I may be dumb, but I ain't stupid. Oh, gosh.
Like
yeah. No, I have frostbite in my one finger from working in Connecticut. It's minus 14 degrees that one January. I vowed I would never do that again. So, nope.
So all the horses in the Northeast, you can suffer until spring comes. It's not like you can get there anyway right now.
Well, most of the horses are down here anyway. So, you know, I tried to go to Georgia 2 weeks ago, and I got stopped from their snowstorm. So, yeah, it's affected me down here. You bet.
So you have a topic that you wanted to talk about today. Tell us what you want to talk about.
Well, actually, Jennifer had asked me to come up with a story that was exciting and scary and entertaining all at once. And the one story that seemed to pop in my mind was the night I was exposed to a horse with rabies about 15 years ago.
Oh, so my gosh.
I thought I'd relate that story to you. It'll take a couple of minutes. And you guys can interject any time. There is one little gory story part, but it ends with all of us laughing, so it should be good. Is that all right?
Okay. All right, good. So if you're eating breakfast, take note.
I'll give a warning. It's also a way to remember some essential things as horsemen to remember about your horses and the care of them. There's 55,000 cases of rabies worldwide, last time I looked. And that's a lot, but there's very few cases of rabies in the United States, especially in horses. And I think there's only one or maybe two cases of rabies in humans. But once you get it, it's a fatal disease, and there's no turning around. There's no treatment. And it basically the virus goes into your brain and stops your brain functions, and you know you're going to die, and you basically go crazy knowing that you're going to die and there's no treatment. So it's not good.
Now, there's a happy topic for this morning, Dr. Tucker.
And guess what, everybody? The number one sign of rabies in a horse is, are you ready? It's colic.
Huh. I didn't know
really?
That.
Yes. So, here's my story. And by the way, if anybody out there is listening on my, out there, I'd like you all to just send a little note to the Horses in the Morning Facebook page to let them know that you're listening, because they would really love to know that there's somebody in South Africa or Australia or Indonesia who's listening. And I've got friends all over the world that I've asked them to listen to this morning. So go ahead and click on their website. Let them know that they're being heard around the world.
Well, on that note, awesome. Dr. Tucker, thank you so much for that. And on that note, Mark Stillwalks of Frozen Long Island, New York, says he's listening, and he thinks you're a gentleman. I think you have him fooled. And a good old-fashioned horseman. So he's listening from – he's already posted on our Facebook page. Thank you so much for that plug.
Thanks, Mark. And he's known to me as the Dorito Man. Because every time I go to his farm, he always has a bag of Doritos. So
well, there you go.
Good job. So one night is about 10 o'clock at night on a Saturday. I was coming home from the movies with my wife, my son, and my German foreign exchange daughter, who's visiting for a year then, Frederica, who's now a physician over in Norway. And the phone rang, and this person asked if I could come out tonight and kill their horse.
Oh.
And being the gentleman that I am, I quickly said to them, well, let me look and see if I can fit you in. And I was like dumbfounded, and I had to take everyone home and go out. And I said, so what's the story? Well, apparently a week before, on a Sunday afternoon, about 3 p.m, a raccoon had wandered into their barn. And this is a typical barn in upstate New York, which was an old dairy barn that had one solid wall in the back that was stone because that was built into the earth. And then it had three sides of a stall made out of one 2x6. So if you can imagine, there's four posts, basically, that went from the floor to the ceiling, a solid rock wall in the back, and then three sides made up of a 2x6. And so a raccoon could walk in and go anywhere. And, of course, horses are pretty curious about these things. And the horse stuck his nose down, and the raccoon reached up and scratched his nose with its paw. And they were concerned, and they had called out a veterinarian that week and said, we're concerned. And he says, well, there's nothing you can do about it. If you think the horse has been attacked by a rabid animal, we're not against, it's against law for us to vaccinate the horse. It's not going to help your horse. But they went ahead and checked all the horses and vaccinated them. They also went ahead and stuck their hands in the horse's mouth just to make sure the horse didn't have a tooth problem, because at this point the horse was having trouble eating and was just acting a little colicky. And so they were concerned.
No.
So somehow they had tried to call this guy to come out, and he wasn't there. So they called me. And so I arrived on the scene, never been to their farm at all. And here's this horse just standing so quietly in his stall with his head kind of down. And what I always do is I ask the people to put the halter on. And the reason I ask that is I am a man and I am a vet. And some horses don't like either, and I'm not changing. So and so I, easy, Glenn. So I asked him to go ahead.
You caught me off guard with that one.
Well, anyway, now this is a cold evening. I forgot what month it was, but it was in upstate New York, and there were flannel shirts and goose down vests on to keep us kind of warm. And she said, no, she's not going to put the halter on, that I could do it. And I thought that was kind of surprising. So I took the halter, and I walked up to the horse, and again, there's a 1 2x6 between this horse and me. And it was one of those halters you slide over the nose and then up over the ears, and then you attach the throat latch with a clip. So I'm standing directly in front of the horse, and I go to bring the nose through the nose piece and then up over the ears, and the horse attacks the halter, biting it and shaking it like a dog with a toy. And I'm like, yeah, I said, uh-oh. And I don't know if you guys have ever been so scared that your kneecaps start shaking up and down, but that's where I was. I was like, holy crap, there's a 2x6 between this horse and me, and he's going to attack me. And they said, and the owner said, yeah, she had been bitten by him, you know, threw the goose down. It didn't break the skin, but the horse had attacked her, and that's why she said that she knew the horse had rabies and had to be put to sleep.
Don't you love it when they don't tell you the whole story when you get there?
Well, I guess that's a, you know, her point of view was she had. Oh, and by the way, there's more.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So here I am looking at this horse. He's just standing there doing nothing. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to have to get some drugs. Now, there's a new drug out in the market then called Dormosedan, which everybody now knows of. And, you know, a little bit of Dormosedan goes a long way. So I figured if I drew up, you know, 4 or 5 cc's of this Dormosedan and stuck it in the muscle, I could get this horse sedated enough that I could go in there and euthanize it. Well,
Wait. Hold on. Because Dormosedan, you're supposed to use 4 to 5 tenths of a cc, and you're putting in 4 to 5 cc's.
I wanted this sucker like a sound asleep.
Out.
I didn't care if he fell down because I was going to euthanize him. There's no doubt in my mind, based on the history, based on the fact that a raccoon was walking around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which is totally abnormal because they're nocturnal animals. Based on the fact that they visually saw this raccoon scratch the horse's nose, and that the horse had progressed in time to this type of condition, I knew pretty positive that it was rabies. But the only way you can tell if a horse has rabies, or any animal, including man, is to take their brain out and examine the brain under a microscope for certain identifiable traits of rabies.
And that's hard to do without euthanizing it.
Well, we've tried. It's kind of like I tried to cure a lameness by taking the foot home one night and putting it on my workbench and working on it and taking it back. But anyway, so here's this horse really just acting depressed. And I figured I'd just, I told the people, hey, bring a bucket of grain over, and while it's busy, I'll go over and just jab it in the muscle and just jam the stuff in. I had an 18-gauge needle, so it would go in really quick. And so they've got the horse on one end of the corner of the stall, and I sneak around the pole, and I reach over to just jab this thing somewhere in its buttocks. That horse wheeled around and attacked me and bounced off the 1 2x6 board, held on by three nails.
Oh, my God.
And now my kneecaps are really shaking. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, and I tried for the next, 45 minutes. I attached it to a pole. I tried to be like 5 or 6 feet away and just jab it. And this horse was highly alert to what I was doing and otherwise just sat there doing nothing. And finally, I told the owners that we're just going to have to shoot this horse. And up in upstate New York, they have shotguns with deer slugs in them, which is a chunk of lead. And he had those slugs, and he brought a shotgun out. And now I had to tell him exactly where to shoot, because you want to get him in the heart. You cannot shoot a rabbit animal in the brain, because then they can't look for this tissue to prove that it's rabbit.
Oh, good Lord.
So here comes the gory part, if you're listening.
Okay, if you don't like gory, turn it off for 2 minutes, but come
back. Everybody cover your ears.
Not 2 minutes, just 30 seconds. But he was concerned that when he shot the horse would go crazy and would come through and attack us. And he wanted to make sure that the horse went down. And I said, there's no assurance, but a good chunk of lead set in the right spot would work. And he had, if I recall, it was a semi-auto shotgun, which meant every time he pulled the trigger, a new cartridge was placed in the chamber. And he fired 5 slugs into this horse's chest area from the side to the shoulder. And then he continued to click the trigger because he didn't realize he was done. And I had to touch him on the shoulder and say, it's over. Because the guy was shooting his own horse, which was just devastating to him. And five bullets make 10 holes, by the way. And through the heart made 1-inch flows of blood coming out into the stall. Yeah. But the horse basically just dropped. And the ordeal was over. And I called my friendly pickup man to take this horse off to autopsy, where we had special notes on it, rabies suspect. Now, rabies, it's interesting, will die within probably 3 hours. I may be wrong, a little off on this, but it should be about 3 hours on a warm day in a carcass. So I wasn't too concerned about the necropsy people contracting rabies. So if you get a roadkill out there, if it's fresh, and if it's your dog or it's a rabid animal, just make sure it stays out in the sunlight for a while before you touch it or wear gloves. And this is really concerned for people who shoot deer and hunt deer, because deer can also contract rabies as any mammal can. And all the deer hunters up north now wear gloves and are very careful because rabies is endemic in some of the deer populations upstate New York. Mm. But So the horse went off. They extracted the brain and sent it off to Albany, to the one lab that was able to determine it. And Wednesday morning, my pager went off, and it was the health department saying, Dr. Tucker, come in and get your post-exposure rabies shot. It was definitely positive for rabies. So I went in and had to drop my pants and get 2 shots of gamma globulins, 1 in each hamstring muscles. That's just back to your thigh. And then I also got
unpleasant.
It's not as bad, because years ago they used to give shots in the abdomen, and that was the only way to do it. And that was very
It used to be like a series of like a dozen or 2 dozen shots in your stomach, basically, right?
Correct. So now it's just gamma globulin. And then they vaccinated me in my arm. And then I went back to 3 days, and then 7 days, and then 14 days, and then 28 days for vaccinations in my arm. And that got my titer up pretty well, so I'm protected against the awful disease. And so did everybody else who was exposed to that animal. They went through it, too. It made the cover of the newspaper in the town. Everybody made a big was very worried that there are rabid raccoons all over this area. It was near Ithaca, New York. And for the next year, I just proclaimed to anybody who wanted to get their horse vaccinated for rabies that they had to do it. I wouldn't work on your horse unless it was vaccinated for rabies. And if you couldn't afford it, I'd go out there and vaccinate your horse for free. It just, we need to protect the population. And that's my message to all the people who are listening. If you're going to vaccinate your horse for anything, make sure it's for rabies, because that's the disease that can affect you. And also for any other diseases that can kill your horse, such as tetanus and encephalitis. Those are your basic vaccines, and that's the take-home message. And make sure that they're current. Unfortunately, the label says that you need to boost it every year in a horse. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but that's what the label says. And the health department's going to ask you, is your horse vaccinated? And if you can prove that it's been vaccinated every year by a veterinarian, then they're not going to bother you or isolate your animal, including your dog or cat.
We do have a rabies story as well. Raccoon, same thing. Jennifer came in the house one day. I think I was working in the house. We had our big barn then, and she came out and said, "There's a raccoon in the rafter of one of the horse's stalls." It was a pony we had, and he doesn't look right. So I came out, and sure enough, the raccoon was right above the horse in the stall, it like sort of in the rafter part. We also had a bank barn, which is what you were talking about. And we had more than one 2x6, though, on the wall. So I went in and got the gun, and I shot that thing probably 5 or 6 times before it finally died. We got the pony out of the stall, and we brought it in.
Oh, my gosh. I'm glad I thought you were saying you shot the pony.
No.
Like,
no. Shot the raccoon. We got the pony out of the stall, shot the raccoon 5 or 6 times. It just would not die. And sure enough, we had to pack up the whole raccoon carefully with gloves and the whole thing, bring it over to the state. And within probably a day, Jennifer, I think, they were at our farm. They drove out to our farm and that raccoon was rabid. We want to know every horse that it could have touched and blah, blah, blah. And we had to isolate that pony for 6 months, and it did have shots, but we still had to quarantine in a separate building that pony. And what a pain that was, because every time you went down and touched that pony, you had to completely change your clothes, and, you know, it was kind of a mess. But fortunately, we didn't have to get the shot.
Yeah.
Well, it is fortunate. It's very fortunate. And the thing that we have to remember is the virus is transmitted between animals using saliva. And if that saliva gets on an open cut or your mucous membrane, such as your eyeballs, you can be infected. You know, you go up and you kiss your horse, and it kisses you back, and you can get the virus. They don't have to bite you, and then you don't know it. And here's the funny thing. The virus, when it enters your body, will find a local nerve, and then it follows the nerve all the way up to the brain. So if you're bit in your foot, it'll take longer to get to your brain than if the raccoon scratches the horse on the nose, because there is a straight shot up to the brain. And that's why from Sunday to the following Saturday, this horse had a full case of rabies. It may take up to a month to get from the toe up there.
Yeah, completely symptomatic. So I guess what that means is, first lesson, thing to do when dentist shows up at your door, give the dentist the whole story. The whole story.
Oh, but wait, Jamie, there's more. Fast forward 10 or 12 years, and I'm down here in Florida, and this woman calls and says, my horse is having trouble eating. It's acting depressed and doesn't want to eat its food, and I have a feeling it could be his teeth. And I say, well, usually horses that have teeth problems are hungry, have a great appetite, but physically can't chew. But she wanted me to come out, so I did. I went to her barn. And it was the first horse in the barn, in the corner stall, and I'm looking at the horse, getting the history from the lady, and the horse is acting depressed. And so I said, okay, I'll check the horse while I'm here. And for those of you who don't know my style of dentistry, it involves me placing my hand all the way in the horse's mouth and feeling each tooth with my fingers, which a lot of equine dentists, they just use a speculum and then I'll open the mouth with a flashlight. So I'm right in there, right up to my elbows in the horse.
Oh,
but before I go in, I said to the lady, how's the rabies vaccination on this horse? And her answer was, I'm not sure. I'm pretty positive. Which is my second lesson to tell people. These are important pieces of information that you should have on your fingertips and know. The problem is a year comes and goes, and we just don't remember. So you have to create some sort of tickler file that reminds you that on February 3rd, it's time to make sure the vet's out there and boosting your horse.
Pocket stable. I was thinking
about that. Because pocket stable is you advertise. And I'm thinking, here's an iPhone or Droid app that could help people with a little reminder system. So,
yeah,
whatever works. But anyway, here I am. And the lady says, yeah, I'm pretty sure. And I stick my hand in the horse's mouth, and it's all the way in there. And I'm feeling the last tooth. And my eyes kind of drift over to the entrance of the barn. And in walks, at 2 in the afternoon, a raccoon.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm sitting there looking at this raccoon and going, and this is exactly what it sounded like. Words couldn't form. I was like, And this poor lady's looking at me, looks and turns around and turns back to me. She says, oh, that's Gertrude. She's our pet raccoon. She's okay.
Oh, my gosh.
And I cleaned my pants out that night, because, Anyway, since then, I've been boosted, and I'm pretty much current on my rabies. And I'm not suggesting everybody go out there and get vaccinated for rabies, because the incidence of rabies is so low in humans in the United States. But just get your animal vaccinated, especially if rabies is endemic in your area, in the population. Raccoons, foxes, bats, are carriers and can carry it into your barn or out in the field. You'll never know. The horse comes in from the field, and 5 days later, your horse is acting depressed and a little colicky. Your vet comes out. They do a colic exam. They don't know. They tube it. They do all this stuff. They don't know. And slowly, your horse progresses to the point where now it's got full-fledged rabies, and everyone who's seen that horse has been exposed, and it's a nightmare. So it's easily averted with just one shot.
Well, the other thing, too, Dr. Tucker, is we don't have raccoons out here in Phoenix, but we do. I mean, obviously, we have coyotes and everything, but the one thing that we have to watch out for is bats.
Oh, big time. And I had 300 bats removed from my attic when I lived in Ithaca, New York. 300.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
That's horrible.
And they did a sampling. I mean, they were starting to drop in our living room and die, and we'd see them outside, and we didn't realize how bad it was. And they did sampling, and none of them had rabies in the sample that they took. So we're happy about that.
I have a quick question, though, Jamie. So let's take a poll here. Jennifer and I have had this in the old farmhouse we used to live in. So you're laying in bed in the middle of the night. It's 4 in the morning, and you hear the flapping over the bed, and it's a bat flying around. Do you get up and deal with it, or do you do what Jennifer and I did and pull the covers up and wait for him to go away?
Actually, waiting for them to go away is good because in the daylight, they're nocturnal animals, and they will
hide.
That's
what we figured.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh.
And they can hire an exterminator who knows how to find these suckers.
Or you could do what my brother did, which is he was laying in bed with his pug, his dog, and he felt something fall down on his bed. And he looks down, and there is a bat on the end of his bed. What does he do? He takes his dog and throws it at the bat. There's a little bit of everything, I guess, as he threw the dog at the bat and then ran, in his boxer shorts out into the street screaming. So you can do a little bit of everything.
Dr.
Tucker, before we let you go, I have to mention one quick thing. And if it's too long of a story, you'll have to get back with us on this one. But your wife has posted on our Facebook page, and it says, "Mrs. Jeff here. If you've got time, ask him about having to trim some lady's pig's feet."
Oh.
What on earth?
Oh, God.
Must be a good one.
There was a time in my life, right after I sold my practice, and the year between selling my practice and then doing just dentistry, which is about 14 years ago, that I decided to work for another veterinarian. And he and I didn't get along very well. And he thought he'd punish me by sending me out to this lady's house to trim her potbelly pig's hooves. And I'm like, I'm a horse vet. Not that I'm a little snotty here, but, you know, I don't know much about pigs. That's what I'm trying to say. And
right.
He sends me to this neighborhood. Now, this is a pretty upscale neighborhood outside of Albany, New York. House after house after house, no yards, no turnout for any farm animals. This is like downtown city type stuff. And I'm like, this is weird. And I'm double checking the address, and sure enough, it's the right address. And so I go up to the front door, and I'm wearing coveralls because I'm just not too sure what I'm going to be handling here. And this lady comes out in a very fine dress, and she's a good-looking woman. And she says, "Oh, Dr. Tucker, I'm glad you're here. Please come on in." So I walk in, and her house is immaculate. I mean, absolutely immaculate. And she says, "The first thing I ought to tell you is my pig, whose name I totally forgot. We'll call him Glenn for a second."
Hey.
I love it.
He hates having his hooves trimmed. And I'm like, I've been set up. I hate my boss. This is just not going to go well. And she says, "I can't even trim my own nails, my fingernail clippers, without him squealing and running away." And so now I've got a psycho case. Now, I'm not sure if it's the woman or the pig, but it's a psycho case. And she says he's laying in the living room. So I go in the living room, and this lady's living room is pristine. And she's got a white couch, an L-shaped couch with a coffee table. And this pig is laying between the couch and the coffee table. Now, when I hear potbelly pig, I think, you know, 50 pounds to 150 pounds, something manageable. This sucker was 500 or 600 pounds. It was a
full-size guilt.
It was just laying there, sound asleep. And I'm thinking, oh, my Lord. So I got my hoof trimmers with me, the little clippers, and I say, okay, I'm going to do this. And I decided that I'd be a little bit more aggressive than I thought I might have to be, seeing that he weighed 3 or 4 times more than me. And I said, I'm just going to throw myself on top of this thing and start clipping. So I did. The thing is squealing. I mean, breaking panes of glass. It's just ear-shattering, squealing. And the thing is throwing itself around. And I'm clipping one front hoof. I'm clipping the second front hoof. The hind legs, I said, I ain't touching those suckers. In the meantime, to help me, this woman throws herself on top of me. So now the three of us are riding the house all over the place. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I get done, and we all get up, and she's disheveled, and she's just rearranging her dress. And I'm thinking, all right, now what? After all this, that's when her husband comes out of the kitchen and says, "Need help?"
Oh, my gosh.
True story, says, as I'm sitting here, true story. I'm writing a book, gang.
Oh, Dr. Tucker.
You need to write a book, Dr. Tucker. No, it needs to be a movie. You can't do this in a book. It needs to be a movie.
Yeah. Dr. Tucker's book, a movie, is going to be called Tuck, not to be confused with Buck. And don't add that other word, because it ain't happening.
Oh, God.
Thanks, well, Kathy.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Tucker. We will certainly look forward to having you back again.
See y'all. Thanks. Appreciate it. Bye.
Bye.
His website, theequinepractice.com. That's how you can find out more of whatever you want to know.
I need a break. Let's play a Templeton Thompson.
Wait. Right. I got to let you know our daily ad, our sponsor for today is our friends at EZSignsOnline.com. You can browse their unique website to see their many custom sign style options. Their step-by-step sign ordering process allows you to choose your sign options and see all the pricing up front. You can get a pair of vehicle magnets for as low as $49. Large, colorful, personalized stall nameplates, $29.95. They have pet memorial markers. They also have a free shipping promotion going on this week for any order over $100. So that'll save you a lot of money right there. Visit EZSignsOnline.com, 1-800-640-8180.
What a picture. Brown hair and blue jeans, just a baby. Still so naive, full of wonder. Your mind, but it got here so fast, I almost left you behind. Oh yeah, I remember you, little girl, big dreams, nothing to lose, a pocket full of possibilities, all the wings on your shoes. You might not even recognize. I'm still there. Stars in my eyes, riding horses. Oh, those are my clients. Before anyone said that it couldn't be done. Sometimes I miss what it meant to be young.
Templeton Thompson, I remember you, templetonthompson.com, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning. I'm Jamie Jennings, of course, Glenn the Geek here, brought to you today by EZSignsOnline.com. And coming up in a minute, this is kind of a what we call a big get. We're going to talk to Eric Hamelback, the manager of the unbelievably prestigious Adena Springs Farm. So if you guys have any questions about breeding, or if you're, you know, if you're a small breeder, or if you are a thoroughbred breeder and you want to pick the brain of somebody who knows everything in the horse world as far as breeding goes, I mean, he's only won like 7 Eclipse Awards. So, you know, whatever. But you want to talk to Eric Hamelbeck, you can always, and you can always give us a call for any other reason at 347-637-3238. I love Jeff Tucker, Dr. Tucker.
Oh, man, my face hurts from laughing. You know, Dr. Tucker knows how to tell a story. He gets, you know, he stretches. You're good at this, too. You're better at this than I am. He stretches it out. He gets all the details in. But he knows which details are going to relate later in the story. It really makes those work. But then, you know, he throws in a little gory, a little gross, along with the funny. He knows how to tell a story.
I'm telling you, I wasn't expecting the ending of the rabies story, though, where they ended up having to shoot the horse 100 times.
No, but see, that's what made it a very interesting story. And people on Facebook really loved. We have a lot of new Dr. Tucker fans that are joining us. Mary says, I'm a first-time listener. Great show. I'm a stay-at-home mom who doesn't get to ride as much as I like. What a great way to get my horse fixed with morning coffee. Well, Mary, welcome to Horses in the Morning. Tell all your friends. Join us every morning from 9 to 10:30 Eastern. We'd love to have you and a bunch of other people, too. So if you were a Dr. Tucker fan and you're still listening to the show and you enjoyed hearing Horses in the Morning this morning, drop on over to our Facebook page at horsesinthemorning.com and put a little note and tell us where you're from. We like to hear where all our listeners are from as well. So that's fun. We'll have him back every month, and we'll hear more Dr. Tucker stories.
I love the Cheryl Figures post. She said, I totally enjoyed Dr. Tucker. My staff is worried because I'm alone in my office laughing out loud. So, yeah, people are going to start to think you're crazy, so just be careful. But we have our next guest on, and I am so unbelievably excited to talk to somebody of his caliber. As far as the world of thoroughbred goes, you know, you guys all know I'm a huge fan of thoroughbreds and racing and breeding. The whole, you know, thoroughbred world is so interesting to me, and I hope it will be to you, because we have on the phone Eric Hamelbeck, who is the manager, like I said, of the very prestigious Adena Springs Farm. So I'd like to say good morning, Eric. How are you?
Good morning, Jamie. I'm doing well. I hope you and Glenn are doing well.
Yeah, this is fun today.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. I mean,
no problem. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, I told our listeners that, you know, if they had questions to call in now, because when else are they going to talk to a guy that knows just about everything in the thoroughbred breeding world that there is to know?
Well, thanks for that compliment, but I'm sure that everybody in this position certainly will tell you that our wonderful horses teach us something every day. It's a never-ending learning experience working with these guys, and we're certainly privileged to work for Mr. Stronach and the Adena Springs program. You know, I've been with Frank since 1997 and certainly enjoyed every minute of it, and glad to be in the position I'm in now of such a wonderful, wonderful farm and a great program that Mr. Stronach has laid down.
Well, first we have to congratulate you. You guys, horses bred by Adena Springs Farm earned more than double the earnings of its closest competitor. And as a result, your operation was rewarded with its 7th Eclipse Award this year for breeding.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you. Yes, it's quite an honor. Mr. Stronach and the program have certainly been on a mission to improve the breed and certainly influence the breed, and I think he has. But yes, earning our 7th breeder award and then, of course, our 16th overall Eclipse Award is certainly a testament to his passion and commitment to this sport.
Yeah, that's an unbelievable accomplishment. And you guys have farms, satellite farms in Canada, New York, and California. Now, are you involved in managing all of those, or do you focus on the one in Paris, Kentucky?
I focus on the one in Paris. Basically, there are three main portions to Adena Springs. The farm that is in Aurora, Canada, we call Adena North. We do quite a bit of foaling up there to establish Canadian breds. Then, of course, we have our large training operation in right outside of Ocala in Williston, Florida. The farms in New York and California, we just stand our stallions at. So they are managed and owned, obviously, by someone else. But we have branched out a little more this year, putting stallions in New York as well as one stallion out in California.
Okay. So that's what I was going to ask you, too. So you guys do sand stallions. People can send their mares to you for boarding and layups and all that. Now, you also do the training and everything. You send all the yearlings down to Florida?
Correct. Once we make an evaluation of the yearlings, Frank will decide if and whom he would like to sell in the yearling sales in the summer and fall. Those that are selected as keepers, which is typically a small group of fillies that would merit, significant breeding production in the future. We keep a small group of fillies, and then we will take the rest of our yearlings to the commercial market. Of course, we sell some, and then some we don't. And then our racing stable would be established after the September sales are completed. That then becomes our keeper group. So we'll head into the new year, what would be their two-year-old year, and the breaking and training process starts down in Williston, usually around the month of October, again after the September yearling sales are done, and we'll kick off the new year.
How many foals a year do you see?
Well, it varies. I mean, we've had crops that would push 230 foals last year. The yearlings we have of this year, we have about 140. And then this current foaling season that we're in, that we just started in 2011, our number is a 120, I believe, about 120.
Wow. Oh. I have a question I've always wondered about is how do you – is there a certain percentage of the foals that I'm actually skipping ahead a little bit here because, as Jamie knows, I have ADD, and if I don't ask it now, it's never going to get asked. So as you're going down the line a little bit on the foals that you keep for racing purposes, how do you determine whether a foal is going to be a good racer, and is there a certain number of foals that will never be sent to the races?
Well, you know, that's the million-dollar question that every manager, agent, owner would love to be able to answer, you know, with an arrow in the bullseye. Because, as we all know, dealing with living organisms that have their own brains and can run through a fence, you never know what's going to happen. So we do the best we can to, I'll use the word, judge each of the foals as they progress, as they grow. And doing that, we try to achieve a grade, and that grade then we pass on to the owner, and then he'll make selections based off of not only the grade but the pedigree as well. So, you know, we're taking a chance. I mean, there are certainly horses that everybody can look at and say confirmationally they shouldn't even be able to run, but yet they win grade one after grade one. One of our own Eclipse champions that comes to mind is Ginger Punch. Confirmationally, she would not be what anybody considered perfect, but yet she just won and won and won. You know, and then you have horses like we're standing here, that we stand here for, the Mosses, Giacomo. Confirmationally, he's outstanding. And, of course, again, just a Kentucky Derby winner. So you never quite know based off confirmation and based off how they're growing, because at the end of the day, you can't measure their heart, their attitude, and their will to win. I certainly can tell you from working with thoroughbreds as long as I have, every one of them has a will to run. You can see it from the moment they start being able to be turned out as foals. They spend a lot of their time running. They love to run. But you can't measure the competitiveness, and certainly some horses have it more than others. And unfortunately, us humans, we can't measure that. We can't put a tag on it.
Oh, wouldn't it be nice, and we'd all be a lot richer if we could.
Exactly.
So you mentioned Giacomo. By the way, there is nothing cooler than driving through Lexington in March or April and seeing all the foals out there, because you're right, they just run. They just run and run and run, and it's perfect footing and perfect fencing, and their moms just keep an eye on them. It's definitely a special experience to see that. But you've mentioned Giacomo, of course, the Moss's Derby winner. And you've also got, you know, he only won about $2.5 million. So
yeah.
But you know what? He's not even your leading earner. Tell us a little bit about your stallions.
Well, we have a very wonderful group. And, you know, touching just really on the horses that are here in Kentucky, of course, we have an outstanding roster in all of our locations. But Awesome Again is, you know, primarily and certainly tagged as one of the premier stallions, certainly active, but of all time. I mean, he really has become one of the elite stallions with 10 grade one winners. You know, he's right up there with Smart Strike, AP Indy. He is the only active sire with 4 Breeders' Cup winners, a Breeders' Cup winner in your first 4 crops, and, of course, the only Breeders' Cup Classic winner to ever sire a Breeders' Cup Classic horse, which, of course, is Ghost Zapper. Ghost Zapper, again, just, you know, on a wonderful specimen of a horse and, you know, arguably, certainly measurably, the fastest horse of all time since the advent of Ragas and Numbers and Buyer Speed Figures. He certainly qualified as being that. His crop, his first crop now just turning 4, highlighted by grade one winner Stately Victor, who won the Bluegrass Derby, with another list of stakes winners behind that. You know, so having both of those, and the reason I like to highlight those two, because they are homebred champions, it makes it more special for us. Every Eclipse Award winner that we have ever had, as far as a horse is concerned, was conceived, foaled, and raised and raced by us. And that's quite an accomplishment. I was there the day we won 2 Breeders' Cup races on the same day with Perfect Sting and then Macho Uno. And it was goosebumps don't even really describe how wonderful the feeling was to be there. And then, of course, Macho Uno here also with us at the Kentucky Farm in Paris, half-brother to Awesome Again, so just an outstanding family. And, you know, he has done extremely well as a stallion, highlighted with his leading money earner, which is Macho Again.
Yeah, I mean, the lineup and the list of horses that you guys have, I mean, when you've got I don't think that anybody else has this, because you've got standing a Breeders' Cup winner and then the son of a Breeders' Cup winner who also won the Breeders' Cup.
It's
even hard to explain there, but yeah, the lineup you guys have. I guess maybe one of the final questions I have for you is, how do you guys pick what mare goes with what stallion?
Well, that's a great question, and certainly a lot of thought goes into it. And our mating list, we call it, so at the beginning of every breeding season, which actually starts the November before, so November 2010, we begin to put together our mating list. And, again, a testament to Mr. Stronach, to his program, he individually highlights every mare and creates the mating. He's very much concerned with outcross the lineage and not trying to inbreed too much, and that, of course, has been a well-established part of our program, of his program, and determining an outcross. And you know, there are certainly programs that have succeeded with inbreeding, and of course, it's just a protocol and a program that he's chosen to follow. Another input that he will take from managers such as myself, if there's a conformational default that a mare may have, we might bring that to his attention. So he might change the mating to a different horse if his original mating would have the same fault. Genetically, conformation is about 65% heritable. So if we have a stallion that turns in, we would probably not prefer to breed it to a mare that turns in both front, because you're about 65% of the time going to get a foal that turns in. So, you know, trying to give it the are the best possible phenotypic foal. We do some of that in our discussions about the matings, but make no bones about it. When it comes down to the ADINA program, Mr. Stronach puts a lot of time and effort into studying the pedigrees, understanding the pedigrees, and mating those to whom he thinks would be the best mating to produce a good sound racehorse.
Now, we're talking with Eric Hamelbeck, who's the manager of ADINA Springs Farm. And a question for you. You talked about, first of all, you guys are known for not doing any inbreeding or line breeding, as they call it. And I couldn't agree with you guys more. Just for other reasons, it just seems kind of wrong to do that. But you guys have really cleared up a lot of the bloodlines. But when you talked about conformation and breeding horses with conformation flaws, you talked about the mare that you guys have that ran, I'm blanking on the name right now, but do you breed her and just try to figure out who would be the best to do it, or do you just not breed her anymore, even though she ran?
No, we most definitely will breed a champion. You're referring to Ginger Punch. And she actually was bred, ironically enough, she's by Awesome Again. Again, one of his Breeders' Cup winners, and of course she was champion older female that year. She was bred and then eventually sold, but she was in foal to Bernardini. Bernardini, of course, is a son of AP Indy, who's quite in the news right now. Vinyata. Yeah. So again, very good racehorse, very, very good pedigree. And both conformationally and genetically, she fit our Ginger Punch. And then, of course, we ended up selling her in November of 2009 for $1.6 million. So she's going on to be a mother and hopefully a successful mother, as well as being a great race mare.
Eric, I do have a question for you, and I think we'll have probably wrap it at this, but thoroughbreds are one of the very few registries that still, or breeds that still does live cover. Do you ever see that? And of course, we mean that the boyfriend and girlfriend have to be together to accomplish things.
Right.
Now, do you ever see that changing? Has there been any talk of it changing?
Well, there's been talk of it, of course, but in all honesty, I certainly don't foresee it changing anytime soon, and I think, the commercialism of our market, if we flooded the market with a particular stallion via AI, I think there would be a lot of our industry that unfortunately would go away. And, as an industry, it's been around a long time, and I think, some of the certainly the show horse world has succeeded, but the gene pool, and again, I kind of come back to the inbreeding, the gene pool gets more and more narrow when you allow AI. And at first, it's a very short-term thought process. Everybody wants to breed to the same very powerful sire, and then in the short term it can be very successful, but then in the long term, then you have all these daughters of this sire, so where are you going to breed them? So do you introduce somebody new? And I think just more from the commercial standpoint of not flooding our market with one particular genetic pool really would dictate why we wouldn't do it. There's a lot of talk, not so much from that, but from a medical standpoint. There's a lot of mares that were champions that you would love to have a foal out of, but due to an injury or something of that nature, you can't because of the live cover.
Right.
It's a physical, stressful entity, and it it's not for everyone, and certainly some horses can't do it. So for that reason, there may be some talk, but I would stand behind not being an advocate for it from the standpoint of the commercialism. And also a lot of the farms would, they would go away. And that's something that I certainly don't want to see happen.
Right, yes. Well, you actually probably had one of the best arguments on your side that I've heard. So that was nice to hear. And of course, right now the thoroughbred industry does not need anything that's going to threaten it in any way. I think that
Correct.
We're seeing a little bit of a comeback here this year. Are you feeling good about this year, and are you feeling good about a recovery? Because, you know, we live in Lexington. All we heard about the last couple of years is how terrible the sales were, and, you know, we know people in retail, and it has affected the whole area.
Right.
There aren't as many foals on the ground this year, and, you know, we'll see that. Last year, when that time came that Jamie was talking about, when you're driving around and you see the beautiful fields and the green and the babies and all of that, there were just not as many of them last year. Are we going to see that change, you think? Or do you have? Are you hopeful?
Well, I'm very hopeful. I mean, I think the industry as a whole is going through changes. You know, we are not as marketable as we once were as an entertainment industry. And make no bones about it, guys, we are an entertainment industry. And when there are other means of entertainment that people may partake in, you know, basically gambling is what I'm talking about, you know, there is a call for everybody to come together to try and make the playing field in Kentucky level. And I think that's a big platform for us and those at David Schweitzer, you know, the entire KTA and those in the political realm that are trying to help us out. We just want to have an equal playing field. So I think, you know, some of the avenues that we're going down can most certainly continue to improve. You know, a smaller market or a smaller foal crop, I'm going to say, and hopefully nobody writes in mad at me, but I'm going to say that is good for the industry.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
From the standpoint of, you know, it's a supply and demand. If we have an oversupply, there's not as much demand. And, you know, we certainly raise horses, but it is for the commercial market, for the entertainment value of racing. And if people don't come to the races, then we've got to shrink that market, whether it's number of foals, whether it's, you know, you move into the racetrack, you're talking about shrinking the number of days that you race. You know, there's a lot of shrinkage. As you said, Glenn, it's not just our industry. Certainly compared to some of the downfalls we've had in years past, this is a global recession-type, you know, economic downturn. It's not just us. And, you know, I'm no different than probably you guys as a family. You start to budget your money, and entertainment is some of the first things that gets cut out, and that's kind of what we see.
Eric, I wanted to say before you get off of that point, is I think it's that what you just said, and it's a combination. By the way, thank you very much for saying that horse racing is entertainment. We're trying, you know, here at the Horse Radio Network, what we always say with all of the shows we do is that we're entertainment first, we're education second. That's what horses are for most people. It is a form of entertainment, whether you compete or whatever you do.
Exactly.
It's entertainment, you know. And one of the things that I wanted to follow up with is, yes, I absolutely agree with what you just said. And also, we have to make it entertaining again. And I think Zenyatta has started to do that this past year. And one of the things that Jamie and I preach on this show is let's make horse racing fun. Let's make it fun for everybody that goes out. Let's bring the horses to the people and make them accessible. And I hope that what has started with the Mosses and Zenyatta continues throughout the industry, because that's what's going to make it entertaining, fun again.
I agree. And changing, you know, we all have to adapt. We all have to change certain scenarios, like Churchill has done with the night racing. And trust me, growing up in Louisiana, having late post, it's not easy as a horseman, you know, to have a late post. But you're doing it to gain the attendance and bring back the entertainment value. You know, even you saw shades of it with the Breeders' Cup and a little bit later post. And, you know, this industry has got to change because, again, it's been a long time since we've been the number one spectator sport.
Well,
and if we could figure out a way to do something during those 20-minute breaks, because let me tell you what, between the races, because my ADD kicks in, I want to see Dixieland bands, I want to see concerts, I want to see a party going on, because Boy, oh boy, that's the worst part for me.
There you go.
Not me. I go running down to the paddock, and then I run back to the track, and then I run back to the
paddock. That's like me, Jamie.
Paddock.
I watch the live race, and then I'm looking for the next simulcast TV to pick up the one that's being broadcast from somewhere else.
What else can I bet on right now?
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, well, you know what, Eric? Thank you so much for joining us. We have a mutual friend, obviously, Jack, who was too much of a wimp to come on and be on the show.
Well, I would say he's just so important that his schedule is just out the door.
Yeah, right. He's sitting right now having a cup of coffee. So anyway, thank you for filling in where, you know, jumping in when he gave you the call because he was chicken. But we're going to have to come visit you. I'm going to be in Lexington in April for Rolex and to go to closing day at Keeneland. So we'll have to come out and see you.
Absolutely. Your open invitation to both of you guys. Anytime you'd like to come out, I'd love to show you the farm and, you know, maybe end up at Keeneland that afternoon. That'd be great.
Well, that's
so
usually
much,
where
Eric.
I meet up with Jack. Yeah, so Keeneland until too late.
Exactly.
But obviously, thank you so much for joining us. Eric Hamelback, the manager of Adina Springs Farm, joining us. And what's your website so people can go check out the farm?
It's www.adinastallions.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric.
Oh, you guys are very welcome. I really appreciate the invitation and anytime.
Thanks.
Well, what
a fun day. I learned so much today. This has been a great show.
This has been a lot of fun. It's been a great show. And a good get there with Eric. He was very informative, and he came out and said some things that I haven't heard too many of the farm people around here say. And when he came out and said that racing is entertainment and we can't forget that, I think that's one of the things that the Mosses realized early on is they have to make it entertaining again, and the Mosses have done a great job. Let's hope the other owners pick up on that.
Oh, absolutely. And how funny is it that, like, you know, just going that they own Giacomo, right? The Mosses own Giacomo. And I didn't even think about this. They didn't breed Zenyatta to Giacomo. They picked Bernardini.
I know.
That's pretty funny. I love it. But you're right. The thoroughbred industry is probably – it's the most seeped in tradition, and just the fact that some of the tracks put in the artificial footing was amazing enough to me. But you're exactly right to make it entertaining first, but it's just such a hard group of old race guys to change that I'm glad there's somebody like Eric out there who's you know, kind of telling it like it is and like, wake up, people. Let's make this fun.
Well, they're not going to be around another 5 years unless they wake up, because there's too much competition for that entertainment. Well, I don't know if we could call it entertainment, for that wagering dollar. When you see, man, we, you know, in the drive we took to Philadelphia, how many casino signs did we see between here and there? You know, there's just so many casinos out there now, and now Ohio's going to be putting in casinos, and, you know, every state's doing it, and, you know, there are a few holdouts, but they're going to be doing it before long, too. So, yeah, let's make it entertaining. Let's make it fun to go to the track again, and that'll bring in the money that's needed to keep the industry going. Hey, go ahead.
Wait, I was just going to say, and then you got to thank places like Rerun for taking these horses and finding them homes again. And the thoroughbred industry, actually now when you register your thoroughbred, you have to donate money to places to that take horses off the racetrack. So I do think that they're getting that right as well. They're addressing these concerns. So, that's my 2 cents.
And if you're a racing geek and a breeding geek like Jennifer is, you can go to adinastallions.com and find out what hypomating is. Hypomating. I had no idea what hypomating was, but you can find out on their website. Well, we have some new listeners today. Thanks to Dr. Tucker. We want to thank all of the new listeners for joining us. Please tell all of your friends, post it on Facebook. I want to just go over a couple things. You can listen to our show on your iPhone or your Droid phone. Just go to horsesinthemorning.mobi on your browser, M-O-B-I, horsesinthemorning.mobi, and you can listen live to our show from your phone if you're out in the barn or whatever. And we also put every show out as a recorded version. It usually comes out within an hour after the show is done. You can find that on our website at horsesinthemorning.com, or we post all of the recorded shows. You can listen to them right on Facebook as well. What other things do we need to tell the new people about? We're here every morning from 9 to 10:30 a.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. We get Jamie up early. She's out there in Arizona, and I am fortunately in Kentucky, so we don't have to get up as early. And you can also find all of our shows on iTunes. Just search for Horses in the Morning on iTunes in the podcast section, and you can download them automatically to your iPhone or your iPod every day and listen to them off of the recorded version as well.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing is if you go to horsesinthemorning.com, we've done shows on Zenyatta. You type in Zenyatta, and it brings up every show. So if you have a particular interest, definitely go type that in and see if we've done a show about it, because we probably have. Or if we haven't, send us an email on Facebook and let us know what you want us to research for you, and we will do it. You can always give us a call, too, at 347-637-3238 at any time.
And we want to thank Jennifer for being here today, our producer, and my wife. I have to say that apparently in conjunction or people get mad at me. So my lovely wife and producer, Jennifer, is here with us every day as well. Well, that's about it until tomorrow. Don't forget that we have 8 shows on the Horse Radio Network that we do. You can find them all at horseradionetwork.com. We cover a wide variety of topics and subjects. Matter of fact, I go from recording this show to next, Talene and I will be together recording Attack and Habit and a Stable Scoop show. So that's what I have plans for the rest of the day. And I assume are you going to try and ride some horses, or it's still nasty out there in Phoenix?
You know what? I'm going to ride today. The thing is, we've had, I mean, granted, I know so many people are suffering in the cold, but what we have is we had a wind chill of 27 degrees, which is just bizarre for Phoenix, but also constant, consistent 30 to 40 mile an hour winds for the past 2 days. I mean, there's not been a moment when the wind hasn't been blowing 30 to 40 miles an hour. So it's just been crazy, but it looks like things might be a little calmer out there. So back on the horses we go. So I'm going to be riding for the rest of the day. So lucky me.
Yeah, you know, what people don't realize is when you have 30, 40 mile an hour winds, your house is next to the desert. I mean, right next to the desert. Your backyard is the desert. And when those winds kick up, that sand hurts.
It stings. All my horses have blankets and fly masks on right now. They're like, take all this stuff off of us. But you got to protect their eyes. Got to protect their eyes. So anyway, we'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 Eastern. Who knows what we'll get into by then. So goodbye, everybody. Wear your helmet. Thank you, Debbie McDonald. And say goodbye, Glenn.
Bye, everybody.